Hey, what's up, guys? On this episode of Drugs and Stuff, Dave and I start out with drugs in the news. There's an erectile supplement being sold at gas stations. Who would have thought there was some issues with it? Maybe some actual drugs, some things that weren't supposed to be in there. Surprise, surprise. We're going to start out talking about that. And then we're going to go to Danny Bossa of the TRT and Hormone Optimization YouTube channel. And we're going to talk all things TRT. We're going to do that right now here on Drugs and Stuff. Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome back to Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland. I'm Scott McNally. All of our programming is brought to you by TrueNutrition.com. You could use our code ADVICES, and we're also brought to you by GetAzoth.com. You can use our code there, ADVICES10. Dave Crossland, we've got another action-packed show lined up, man.
Hey! Really?
Yeah, we do.
Are we lying about that?
No, we're not lying. I've been working on drugs and birds, Matt Spina just said. He must have heard the previous episode. We got some good feedback on the last episode. People enjoyed that. We had a lot of talk about Superdraw because we were talking about like legal over-the-counter supplements. A bunch of stories of people who nearly died, you know, taking a harmless over-the-counter supplement. And on that note, Dave, I have a pretty interesting drugs in the news today. This is a story that's brought to us by one of our listeners, Jake Radcliffe. And this takes us to a supplement that was recently pulled. It's a dietary supplement. I'm looking at this Yahoo News article. Dietary supplement linked to hypoglycemia outbreak. Last fall, 17 men in Virginia were hospitalized with severe and for some reason life-threatening hypoglycemia or low blood glucose levels after taking a dietary supplement promoted for male sexual enhancement. Within days of the first reports, state health authorities alerted the public about the product, which is called V8, not to be mistaken for the beverage with tomato juice, and was generally sold at convenience stores and gas stations in Virginia. V8 was removed from store shelves when it was found. So analysis later determined that the supplement contained the prescription drugs Viagra, which is obviously used to treat erectile dysfunction, and gliburide. There we go. Gliburide. Thank you. Now, this is a diabetes medication used to treat type 2 diabetes. So there's no question, man. 10 months since the outbreak began, the Food and Drug Administration, which regulates the $45 million supplement industry in the U.S. is still investigating the origin of V8. Wow. It's still investigating the origin. How does something end up on a gas station shelf and they don't even know where it came from?
I'm confusing is that. I mean, obviously, it's a branded product produced by a manufacturer.
Yeah.
So all you do is you look at the product, you're made in. Oh, okay. Hello. Do you make V8? I mean, how does that take 8 months?
I don't know. You'd think they'd be able to figure that out. Why? Now, here's my question. Why would they have hypoglycemia medication in there or a diabetes medication in there? That doesn't make any sense.
No, I was thinking that when I saw it. And at the moment, I can't think of a reason as to why it would be in there.
Yeah.
Gliburide.
Now, what I've seen about this medication is that it basically triggers your pancreas to greatly upregulate the production of insulin. We're talking like a threefold production of insulin. I'm almost wondering, like, man, should I be using this for bodybuilding? You know, I don't know. That's where my brain goes. I don't know.
That's because you're just the druggie who just looks at drugs all the time instead of being natural like me.
I'm a bro. I can't help it. I'm part bro. I admit it. It's okay.
What's the other part?
Nerd. Part nerd.
Gerbil.
Yeah, part and a little bit of gerbil, 10%.
What would your animal be?
My animal? My spirit animal?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. What? Definitely not a bird.
Don't start on the birds.
Dave was telling me all about, he wanted to do like a whole show about birds, I think. He was telling me all about the birds in his backyard, and I'm like, I don't care, let's talk about steroids. That's all I care about.
I was
gear.
Talking about how shit it was at building a nest. Oh, that's you what did I was say talking that. About.
Yes. Yes. So
come on. I want to know what your spirit animal is while I try and think of any reason why you'd have this shit in this supplement.
I'll have to get back to you on that one. Because I'm still trying to figure this out. This product V8. Now I will say this: this is not the first time that the FDA has had an issue with these so-called like male enhancement supplements at convenience stores. I have a report here: FDA warns in 2018 about any product by a company called Rhino. I guess that what do they say here? They had tested what is it? The FDA has identified more than 25 marketed products with variations of the name Rhino that contained hidden ingredients. And those hidden ingredients every time were either Viagra and Cialis. The problem with these things are they don't know what the dosing is. So you might be getting 25 milligrams of Viagra. You might be getting 200 milligrams and that there's no telling in between. So that's been kind of what the issue is. But so far, what I've understood is that out of all the products, every single one of them that the FDA has tested, that's been in the gas station, any of these convenience store supplements, they all contain one of those two drugs. This is where Dave's not paying attention to the show anymore.
No, I am paying attention. I'm also reading about the glyburide. So there, well, piss off. I am actually doing work.
Oh, somebody said that Dave was falling asleep on the show one time. Remember that?
I do.
I think Dave fell asleep.
I was a very poor representation of the fitness world. Or words to that effect.
Yes. Anyway.
Anyway, moving on.
Yes.
Scott and his fake profiles again.
That was me. That was me. I got to admit it. what did you find out about this glyburide?
Well, not much, as it happens. I mean, side effects, sleepiness or weakness, shaking, fast heartbeat, confusion, hunger or sweating. In other words, going hypo.
Yeah.
It, like you said, just as you've said, it increases production in the pancreas. Metformin apparently is not as good.
Okay. I've seen comparisons where they've talked about using either that or metformin. So
yeah, it's metformin is 2.1 times more likely to fail than glyburide. Neither drug is preferable to insulin.
Well, that would make sense.
It can cause weight gain.
Well, naturally.
But there's nothing that would, I was looking for stuff about increased blood flow, you know, something on that nature that might indicate why it would be in an erectile dysfunction.
I wonder if it was just a mistake.
Well, yeah, I mean, that does happen. People do put stupid shit in stuff.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily always for bad reasons, you know, or for reasons that it's going to cause major issues.
Yeah, I suppose this would be another reason to not use these drugs. Because, I mean, there's a thought that's like, well, I can't get my hands on any Cialis or Viagra. I can just buy the stuff from the gas station. But, hey, you may get a dangerous dose, what they say, the potentially life-threatening dose of a diabetes medication.
I think that might be a bit of bollocks.
What's that?
Life threatening.
You've got to
go a long way to start doing stuff that's life threatening, haven't you?
I'll wait for you to read. We'll just hang out and watch Dave read.
Yeah, well, no, I'm looking at the contradictions and stuff, and most of the stuff is diabetic related.
Yeah.
The list of side effects is quite long. Everything from rashes to throwing up to, you know, urine problems right through. So I just can't see anything as a secondary action or anything that would warrant it being in a erectile dysfunction product.
Yeah.
So, like you say, is it in there accidentally for some weird and stupid reason?
Yeah.
It
seems like it could only lead to more issues. I mean, just the oversight of that being in there tells you how much these companies really care about your health. I mean, they're seeing, so something I've seen here is that, so a 200 milligram dose of Viagra, was enough to damage a man's kidneys. That's four times the dose. So we don't even know what's in this pill. Could it be 10 milligrams? Could it be 200, you know?
The other thing as well, I would assume that if it's on par with metformin, that it's a controlled medicine.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's prescription.
So why would anyone who's responsible in any way of manufacturing a product put a prescription-only drug in an OTC product?
Yeah.
I mean, going back to the conversations from last week about Superdraw and Gaspare, they didn't break the law. Superdraw was never classified as a steroid. It was unclassified, so it wasn't controlled.
Sure.
This is still the misappropriation of a controlled drug. This is still a prescription drug being put in an over-counter product, you know.
Absolutely.
That would be like making insulin candies and selling them to kids sort of thing. You know, you've given a product that has a medicinal use and quite severe side effects.
Yeah.
As an open product that anybody could buy.
And not for that purpose either. Like this has, as far as we can tell, nothing to do with sexual enhancement. I gotta say, man, definitely these are things to look out for. And I've seen them. Do you guys have those over there in the UK?
No. They did. It wasn't that long ago. They took Viagra off the medications listing, so you can buy it quite easily now.
Really?
Yeah, so it used to be a prescription medication. You had to go through the doctor to get it. I mean, obviously, there was always the black market sale of Viagra and stuff like that.
It's no longer a prescription there.
No, you can go and buy it in your local pharmacy now over the counter.
Oh, I guess that would kill this market then, basically.
And the other thing with it as well is that there are now companies, there's one that's been advertising quite heavily at the moment called Newman.
Yeah.
That will, once you sign up, they'll send it out to your house in supposedly discreet packaging, big black box, saying Newman right across the top of it. But so, you know, there is a quite buoyant now commercial market for Viagra and generic versions of Viagra in the UK.
Okay.
But is Viagra still a controlled drug over there? Is it still a prescription?
Not controlled. Controlled would be, we consider controlled substances. Obviously, steroids are there and then morphine, you know, anything like that. But it is, yes, it's a prescription medication. You need a prescription from your doctor in order to get it. Which,
so regulated medication, regulated drug would probably be a better terminology then.
We just say prescription, but yeah, it is. That prescriptions, I suppose, would be like our version of, you know, being, we just say prescription, but yeah, it is. That prescriptions, I suppose, would be like our version of, you know, being regulated, right? We don't use that term at all.
It works, doesn't it? You're
absolutely
still regulating the dispensary of it. Thank you. Oh, you're in one of them moods today.
Yeah, I was going to say you're in one of those moods today.
Oh, it's you. Don't blame me. Just because you got out wrong side of bed.
Guys, we're going to have Danny Boss on a little bit later, and I'm grateful because I don't want to have to deal with this for the next hour.
Is it our anniversary yet?
Is it? We're on episode, I don't know when we started, and we haven't done like every week type thing, but we are on episode 60 now.
So we missed our anniversary.
What was our? Well, yeah, I guess that would be the. But we didn't do like one every week.
Well, no, but I mean, we could say episode 52 was our anniversary, couldn't we?
We could. We can say next one is our anniversary if you want.
Okay,
that'd be good.
Where's my present?
Present? What do you? What do you want?
I don't know. Present.
Some gear.
No. Bunch of flowers, maybe.
Bunch of flowers.
Yeah, box of chocolates.
I'll get on that. I'm on that. All right. So,
going back to what we're supposed to be talking about for a change. It makes no fucking sense whatsoever, but it does highlight how poorly regulated supplements and over-the-counter treatments are. Mm. We see it over here, okay? There are hundreds and hundreds of sports supplement shops.
Yeah.
Some that are solely online that sell SARMs.
Yeah.
Now, technically, SARMs aren't legal for sale in the UK. Now, a lot of places will use this. It's a research drug. It's not for human consumption.
Right.
That doesn't wash. In terms of law, that isn't a defense.
No.
Particularly if it's on a supplement website. So it's on a website designed to sell to the general public sports supplements.
No.
We have an organization called the National Food Crime Unit.
You mentioned that last week. I was imagining them going at, do you know who the Hamburglar is?
Yes.
I was imagining them like chasing him around, the National Food Crime Unit.
But obviously it's something that they're now starting to get quite hot potatoes for. But it just shows how many products are out there that potentially could be harmful.
Yeah.
And because they're not regulated, or because they're what's called grey market products, and for those that don't understand what a grey market product is, it's basically a product that's not being legislated in the country it's sold.
Yeah.
So it's not passed for sale, but it's not banned or controlled or condemned.
Yeah.
So they call it the grey market.
Right.
Pro hormones in the UK are grey market products. Some have been included in the 1971 Drugs Act, so some pro hormones are actually listed as banned substances and controlled drugs, but some aren't. So there are still those that are grey products.
Yeah.
And there's products that are licensed for sale in the UK. For argument's sake, you know the nootropic stuff you sent me.
Yeah.
That's not legal in this country.
You're kidding me? I sent you illegal stuff.
You did, yes. I've reported you. Don't worry about it. You get a knock on your door next week. But that's a grey market product.
Huh.
It's not legal for sale. It's not being passed for sale in this country. It's not an approved product for sale in this country. And you see that all over the place.
Okay. Wow.
And this is a really good example of how there's products that get into the marketplace that do have potential harmful side effects.
Yeah. Now this, on the other hand, these two drugs are both prescription medications. And I was steering us towards this whole gas station erectile dysfunction market. Apparently it doesn't take place as much now there in the UK because of legality over the counter for those medications, Viagra and Cialis. Here though, it's not. And so people don't know the dose that they're getting. Some of these pills tell you that you'll have awesome erections for the next 11 days. I don't know where they get that number from, 11 days.
Can you imagine walking around for 11 days with a boner?
That it could be problems. You could get yourself in a lot of trouble with that. That's for sure.
That could be painful.
Or imagine someone who's already has, say, a heart condition, and that they take this pill. It's because they sell these things literally right by the cash register, and be like, yeah, give me one of these. You know, they sell them right there. So it blows my mind that these things are happening literally over the counter, literally sitting on the counter.
Well, wouldn't you, as a gas station owner, look at this and go, am I really okay to sell this shit?
Oh, they sell all sorts of stuff there, though.
Do they?
Oh, yeah. You can maybe get, like, your smoke shop accessories, like a hookah, some rolling papers, a little bit of Viagra medication, along with some Kratom, maybe. Some other...
So I can go... I can go get a hooker from a petrol station.
Yeah, yeah.
As in a prostitute hooker.
No, a hookah.
What the fuck's a hookah?
You don't know what a hookah is?
I speak English, not Americanese. What's a hookah?
It's like one of those big pipes with the hoses that come out of it.
You mean a bong?
It like a bong, yes. But it's like a, you know what? Do you remember the caterpillar on Alice in Wonderland? He was smoking a hookah.
He was smoking a shisha pipe.
I thought he had the hose. It was the hose.
Yeah, Yeah. You've got the big central thing that's usually highly decorated, and you can have more than one hose coming off it. And
a hookah. Yes, exactly.
You can go to shisha bars and sit there. And
exactly.
Other ways, your heart can turn. Yeah, it's Middle Eastern, isn't it?
Yes, we call those hookah lounges here.
See, a hooker over here is a prostitute. So what you're saying is you have prostitute lounges over there where everyone sits around and shares a prostitute.
At least for everybody in the US, I think you're probably appreciating what's going on right now here. All right. I wonder if Danny knows what he's fucked up. I wonder if Danny knows what he's getting into here.
Most of the petrol stations, as in the gas stations in the UK, are generally quite tedious, to be quite honest. You might be lucky to get a phone charger that works.
Yeah, yeah.
But they're quite strict on what they can sell and can't sell, particularly when it comes to things in that nature, medication lines. I mean, you're even limited to what cough and flu medications you can buy from a gas station.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't think we have that here.
We have some quite strict controls around paracetamol. I'm not saying all gas stations enforce it, because a lot don't. They'll sell you a box of them if you want.
That's what I'm saying. There's always that guy.
But then that's the guy that's dodgy in any field and operation, isn't he, at the end of the day?
That's what I'm getting at. He's also selling hookahs.
But you're just picking on gas stations now. What have you got against gas stations?
Well, pretty much that's where these things are coming from. But I guess we won't have a final answer. All I'm going to do is say, guys, don't buy this stuff, because I do see this as being just it's a total crapshoot. You don't know what you're getting. You don't know how much of it you're getting, and you're
Let's put some logic to it. Where'd you go if you want to buy a car?
Probably
car dealer.
Yeah, that.
Where'd you go when you want to buy your supplements, as in protein powder? You go to the supplement shop.
Yes.
So if your dick don't work, why are you going to the petrol station?
I like the way you specified what you meant by supplements. I'd be like, oh, I just texted my guy.
Well, yeah, because when we talk, it generally is. I just text, you know, Bob in my phone. No, but, you know, I mean, so why would you buy erectile medication from a fucking gas station? You've got to be a bit of a next level retard in the first place.
Yeah, it's convenience. It's there. And you don't have access, I guess.
Buy gas from your gas station. That's what they're good at selling.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to buy something because your dick don't work, go to someone who specializes in your dick not working.
That's a good point. That is a good point. Hey, speaking of which, we have Danny Bossa coming on. We have to go to break. But Danny Bossa has a YouTube channel. It is called TRT and Hormone Optimization. So he has dedicated all his time to researching this and having a lot of doctors on that specialize in understanding TRT. So we thought we could bring him on, and I have a list of questions from our listeners. We could ask him some TRT stuff.
Sounds good.
You hear Dave's dog in the background? You hear that? What is that? What kind of animal is that? All right, guys, we'll go to break. We'll be right back in just a minute. Hey, what's up, guys? Scott McNally here, and we're gonna jump to a quick commercial break. So I promise that I'll be brief with this. So this week, we have 5 podcasts coming out. Between the new improved drugs and stuff, we have our Road to North Americans. Of course, Ron and Dusty are back. And then we have Dr. Scott Stevenson laying down some sick knowledge about HIIT training. And we have our new show, Renegade Muscle, with the one and only Lee Priest, along with Jeff Roberts. You know, I'm recording every single one of these programs. I do all the editing, the art, the MP3, the YouTube. And it takes a lot of time. I'm not complaining, because this is definitely a labor of love. I'm living my best life through this. But the only way I can make that work is by somehow getting paid in the process. And that's where our advertisers come in. So, guys, if you enjoy the shows, then I encourage you to shop with our advertisers, because I put these advertisers together with our programs because I believe in them, A, and B, because they're companies that make sense, you know, for us. TrueNutrition.com has some of the greatest supplements that are out there for some fantastic prices. I absolutely believe in them. And they basically carry everything that a bodybuilder could use, from health supplements to performance supplements and a lot more. They have basically every protein under the sun, every flavor that you could think of. They have it all for reasonable prices. So check them out, truenutrition.com, and you could use our code ADVICES. And then you could check out getazoth.com, where we also have a link to their Amazon. Both of those, you can use the code ADVICES10, and they have some of the best nootropics that are available out on the market. If you're looking to like up your edge in life, those things can definitely help. They're fun to experiment, and it's fun to see, you know, like basically just, well, I use them with my podcasting, and I definitely know that I've gotten an edge. So you can get an edge anywhere, be it in work or the gym or a long road trip, whatever it may be. But like I said, I've paired with the advertisers that I believe in, and advertisers that make sense to us. So if you enjoy our programming and that these are the types of products that you would buy anyway, then please consider shopping with our sponsors and using our codes, because that allows me to continue to put these podcasts out. All right, guys, thanks for listening to me. I appreciate it. We've got links in the show notes. Let's get back to the program. Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome back to Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland. I'm Scott McNally, and we have with us now a special guest, so Dave will be on his best behavior. We have Danny Bossa from the TRT and Hormone Optimization YouTube channel. If you guys haven't checked him out yet, definitely head over there. Danny, I've learned a lot about TRT, and I know that in the last how long have you guys been on your channel? Because I know you've learned a lot too. I've seen you evolve and grow.
Yeah, I've been on TRT myself a little over 5 years. It took quite a bit of time to kind of get things figured out. I didn't really have any help in the area. And once I got things figured out, I just found a bunch of other guys that were going through the same stuff that I was going through. So I was, you know, helping them out, and then got involved in this Facebook group, TRT and Hormone Optimization. And then the guy who had started that had this YouTube channel, and he asked for an interview, and I helped him out, and I started doing more and more videos. I partnered up with him for a good, probably about a year, but I actually have removed myself as a partner. I was getting a little too involved, taking up too much of my time, and I had some other priorities to take care of. But I'm still doing videos with him from time to time, just a little less, but all of the content I've done, obviously, is still up there for all to see.
Okay. I didn't realize that part of it. So, you know, overall, I've seen, too, that you've made some good transformations with your physique, too. You know, you've been getting into good shape. Do you feel like it's been a world of a difference being on TRT?
I was kind of under the misconception that, you know, when I started off, my levels were, at near zero. I was like at 220 nanograms per deciliter, which is like really, really low.
Yeah.
And I was trying everything in the gym and lifting, you know, high reps, low volume, this, that, whatever I would try, whatever I would eat. I mean, I'd get a little bit of gains, but then you see the guys sitting on the bench next to me, and they're just, you know, lifting baby weights and chatting on their phone, and they're growing and growing. And I'm like, what the hell? Like, how is this guy growing and I'm not, you know?
Yeah.
So I just thought, you know, if I got on testosterone, that's going to make all the difference in the world. And then there's these studies out there, this Basin study, where they gave 600 milligrams of test to a group of people, and some of them just sat on their ass and literally did nothing, and others would train, and they saw that even the guys that just sat around actually put on muscle, which was interesting.
Do you guys hear that loud? There's like a thumping sound. Is that you, Dave?
Yeah, it's the duck. Yeah, oh. Hang on. Back in.
Sorry, Danny.
I was hearing that also. I was like, is it me or is it?
I thought somebody was moving.
So the interesting thing is, I actually did an experiment where I tried taking a good dose of test. I was taking 500 milligrams a week just to do an experiment.
Yeah.
And saying, I'm just going to train twice a week just to say, and I'll eat the way I was eating before. And like literally nothing happened. Like it just isn't enough.
Yeah.
So my TRT dose evolved over time. I started off really, really low, and I learned over time I need more than most guys just to get the same serum levels that they were getting. But even just taking that, if you're not busting your ass, at least in my case, if I'm not busting my ass in the gym and I'm not eating well, like nothing happens.
Sure.
So the gains that I have now is like, okay, I have enough tests in my system. There's really no excuse. Like, just get to it. I just have been a lot more consistent, I don't, it's, I'm not even really taking all that many days off. If I take a day off, it's like there was really no way for me to train that day, but otherwise I'm training consistent, every set to failure. You know, doing a little bit workouts a little longer, a little more volume and stuff like that. But I just find it was the consistency itself that made all the difference in the world.
Absolutely.
And like I said, everyone's just thinking, oh, you're taking that, so you're just going to grow like a weed. No, trust me. The only difference now that I find is that pre-TRT, if I would get to a certain point and then get lazy and stop training, I would, like, within 2 weeks, I just go, like, I just shrivel up to nothing. I'd lose muscle, like, it was unbelievable.
Yeah.
Whereas
yeah.
now on TRT, if I say, I hurt my shoulder, I need to take a week or two off, I find I don't really lose much. It just helps me retain what I've put on.
Yeah.
Can I ask what your TRT dose is, please?
I'm currently taking 300 milligrams a week. Now, that sounds like... That sounds like a high dose, because most guys are on anywhere between 100 to 200 milligrams a week.
That's a high dose, in my opinion. I run 50 milligrams a week.
50 milligrams a week?
Yep.
I don't know anyone dialed in at 50 milligrams a week. You're in the UK, right? They're big dosing, microdosing testosterone over there.
No, not particularly. It's just that I was running 100 and it put my NMO, obviously we run in NMO, not in NJDL, it put my NMO at 49.
NMO at 49, I'd have to do the math what that would be.
Nearly double upper range. Nearly double.
Oh, wow.
Our upper range is 29. Our upper limit is 29.
Okay, so if I hear, I have a calculator right here. So NMO, you said 29 NMO?
No, I was 49 NMOL on 100.
Oh, sorry, 49 NMOL, which is, oh, so that's a 1,400 total test for our units.
That's a high level. That's a really high level. I would have never guessed that.
That's at 100. If you look at, the thing is, when you look at the injections, say, it was test SIP, I believe, but test ENTH is pretty much the same effect anyway. Because of the half-life, the compounding effect, you don't need hardly anything at all once you're up there. Your maintenance dose is really very, very low.
Okay, so I'm going to give you so you were at 49 NMOL. So just to give you the same thing, at your dose when I started off, I was at 19 NMOL with your same dose, so 100 milligrams a week. That's how I started.
So that would still be, okay, it's not upper range, but it would be adequate for age, really. Comparatively.
Now, when you're saying adequate, are you basing it strictly by the ranges?
Because yeah, I'm basing it on averages, basing it on natural averages.
Natural averages being like what?
Literally every year, right? Literally every year the ranges drop.
Natural average.
The guy that was at the top end of the range for 1 year, the next year they lower the dose and they're like, oh, now you're super physiological. And I think it's crazy.
They haven't lowered the upper limit. They've only lowered the lower limit.
Oh, the lower limit's going down also, at least in North America. I don't know about the ranges in the UK. Yeah.
The upper range is stable. It's the lower limit that's going down because what they're trying to do is prevent treatment.
Mm.
Agreed with the preventing treatment, but here the upper range is going down. When I started off, if we want to just use the whole NMOL thing, when I started off TRT, the upper range was 1100 NGDL. Which was 38 NMOL. Now it's about 27 NMOL, which is a
We've been 29 for the last 10, 15 years.
Oh, wow. Okay. So,
we're quite stable on that. It's the lower end they keep reducing.
Hmm.
So they're lowering both the low end here and the high end. When I say here, I'm in Canada, but Canada and the US, they're kind of similar thinking. The lower end so that... It's like they'll say, oh, you're still in range. Yeah, but I might as well be 150 years old to have this amount of tests. Yeah, but you're still in range.
Yeah.
When I did my test, I was below the range, and they said I wasn't sufficiently below the range enough to treat.
Yeah, we now, get a lot of that over here.
Yeah. Now, the upper range is also being lowered because they don't want guys to get too high because apparently testosterone is dangerous, is going to cause stroke and heart attacks and – prostate issues and all this other garbage that nobody can ever seem to demonstrate, but the higher end keeps dropping down because as soon as your levels now get to you're starting to get into the 700s, you're like, oh, well, you're hitting upper range, so we can't do any more. That's it. But what if have issues at in the 700s? You know, at 700, I'm talking the NGDL. You know, what do you do there? You just say, well, sorry, that's the most I can give.
There was active movement a couple of years ago via the FDA to start to reduce the popularity of TRT. And obviously part of doing that is to bring the ranges lower so that the boost, for want of a very layman, stupid, not really accurate term, is lessened, and therefore the attraction for going on TRT is lessened. Hmm. What are your levels sitting at on 300?
When I measured, the last time I measured them, I was taking 250, and my free T was 28 NGDL. I love this little online calculator. So when you're measuring, are we still, you want to still stick with?
You can stay in US. I've got enough benchmark now to know where I am with it.
Okay, so total, so let's say NG. I was at 1068 NG on 250, so that's 37 nmol. At 250 milligrams a week.
And this, you had no issues with blood count or anything of that nature?
Nothing. I have zero issues. I had minor little symptoms at 250, because I stayed at 250 for quite some time. Libido was like mostly good, but every once in a while, like, things were off. I found my sleep was kind of like so-so. I found energy was kind of hit and miss, and then I did an experiment bringing it up to 300, and all those things just vanished. Hmm. My sleep now is my head hits the pillow and I'm snoring in 3 minutes.
And how long have you been at 300?
Now it's been 6 months.
And how long were you at 250?
Probably about a year.
And when did the symptoms start of things not being so good at 250?
It's not that they started. So I started at 100. I went up to...
So they were always present. They just improved slightly each time.
Yeah, kind of all over the place. I sat at 200 for a long time. And obviously, a lot of things had improved, but there was a lot of stuff that had not improved. Eventually, I got a new doctor. He agreed to move me over to 250. So I went to 250. And then a lot of those things now got resolved. There were still some remaining things.
Right. So it wasn't...
Maybe that's all that it is. But then I tried on my own, bringing it up higher. And now I can literally say I am devoid of any symptoms. I did a video about this with Stephen on the channel just this past weekend, is prior to starting TRT, I was severely deficient in test. I was also severely deficient in estradiol,
E2. Obviously.
And I had developed gyno. So gyno from low E2 and low test, okay? When upon raising the dose, that started getting better and better and better and better and better. And on 250 milligrams, I was finally starting to burn some fat here, and the lump was actually shrinking. Since bringing up to 300, the lump has shrunk significantly and the fat is going away. So that's why, Scott, you've been seeing me post like shirtless pics on Facebook, which I've never had the balls to do before, because my chest was bad. Just having those androgens up there was enough to just fix everything. I'm literally devoid of any issue now. So now I'm just going to stay there. And if I have tried doses higher than 300, and if I get to, like, say the 400 or whatever, which I've tried, I've even gone as high as 5, my sleep gets impacted. And I feel lethargic. 300 for me is like, that's my perfect dose.
What's your estrogen like at that?
My estrogen, when I measured it, taking 250 was 42 PGML. So in your terms here, PGML, you guys do PMOL.
Yeah.
So 154.
That's reasonable.
Yeah.
See, what I'm seeing over here from guys that are just in the 40, 50 NMOL, so a little bit above where you are, so 1,200, 1,300 NGDL range. Mm-hmm. Very aberrant bloods, blood thickening particularly problematic.
Wait, are you basing this on estradiol or on the higher levels of test?
Well, it could be either, because everything's up. That's the problem.
It's going to be more the higher levels of test, because the more you increase your test, the more chances of erythrocytosis, which is basically, as you know, higher hemoglobin, but the estradiol won't have that cause. That's really the testosterone, and some are more sensitive to others.
Yeah, and what I'm saying is that what I'm seeing is when people are running just around the range you are or slightly above, I'm seeing bad FBC, and I'm seeing problems with estrogen, and also seeing problems with prolactin as well. So I don't know. And now I know over in the States that there's a much more of a trend towards just letting estrogen be whatever it wants to be based on your test level. Yet for some reason over here, and I it's quite strange how there's the big difference in the reactions, and I don't know what it is. I'm seeing people with problems. So I'm seeing people running at what would be 1200 NGDL. And as a result of that, their estrogen is sitting in the 250, sometimes almost 300 mark. Prolactin's 386, touching 400, and they've got a whole host of problems associated with. The main one being the bloods. The bloods are elevating. It is thickening. And it's strange that I see over here those sort of problems happening. Yeah, you guys over there don't seem to have those problems when you're running your test near those levels.
Okay, so a few things here. Number one, as soon as people start seeing their hematocrit and hemoglobin getting up to the top of the range and sometimes even above the range, everyone starts losing their shit. And it isn't nearly as much of an issue as most people think. Athletes out there take stuff like EPO to purposely jack up those numbers, because when you have higher red blood cell count, you have better oxygenation of the blood, and actually gives you better performance for athletic related stuff.
Sure.
So I've seen guys with their hematocrit way up there, and you ask them, how do you feel? I feel great. Guys living at altitude will always have those levels up there, and you ask, they're not going around to the blood banks donating blood every week, and they're not all dropping dead. So just because you have your levels up there doesn't mean, oh, something bad is going to happen. If they're having issues, we know they've got blood pressure issues or whatever, and like, oh, I donated blood and I just feel a million times better. Okay, well, you're sensitive to these higher levels.
But these are people that are showing symptoms as well that is improving with blood lead. So it's not just a case of high levels. Right. There are problems associated with those high levels that are linked.
But are you ever seeing guys with higher levels of hematocrit, hemoglobin, just say, I feel fine? Because let's say out of 10, I might find two.
But then people only come to me when they have a problem. They don't come to me when they feel good. Okay. So I only see problem cases. I don't see people that are happy.
The other thing is, doctors who aren't knowledgeable on this will see those levels and think it's polycythemia vera. So the difference between erythrocytosis, which is harmless, and polycythemia vera, which is harmful, is polycythemia vera is like erythrocytosis, higher levels of hematocrit hemoglobin, but there's also a clotting issue, and it's actually a type of blood cancer, so that is bad. But having erythrocytosis doesn't mean it's going to turn into this blood cancer. One doesn't cause the other. So
no, but elevated testosterone does increase blood clotting as well.
Yeah. So again, there's a lot of factors involved, but a lot of doctors we're seeing, they just see these higher levels and they think, oh, we need to address this right away, and you have a major problem and you're going to die. Like, no, it's not the case. Most of the time. You spoke about estradiol or E2, and I was guilty as all hell on this. You're looking at this number going up and down, and you're just attributing all your problems to this number. Oh, every time my E2 goes here, I feel like this, and every time it's here, I feel like this, and so this has to be the problem. So you're laser focusing on this one number, thinking this is the bad thing. Because I know testosterone is good, because that's what makes us a man, and this estrogen, that's the woman bullshit that I don't want in my body. That's the bad stuff. So that's the thing causing the problem. So you're watching the number, thinking it's that. Now, the interesting thing is my estrogen right now is 6 times higher than it was when I started. I feel like a fucking $1 million, and my whatever gyno I had is going away, interestingly enough. There's guys out there that actually don't even make enough estradiol that have to supplement to get it up. So, you know, everyone out there wants their test levels high, so they're looking at the range, And they all want it to be up, you know, towards the top. But as soon as now estradiol starts getting towards the top, everyone starts losing their shit. I'm like, well, it doesn't work that way. If you're going to raise test, you have to know that estradiol is going to follow. As it goes up, this is going to follow. Now, there is a point that estradiol will plateau. So if you just keep raising test, raising test, raising test, it'll hit a plateau and it won't go up any more than that. But in the vast majority of cases, I'm seeing that aren't feeling well or are symptomatic is they're not taking enough, or their frequency administration isn't often enough. There's so many guys out there that come into that Facebook group, I mean, they're like, I take, you know, 150 milligrams a week and I feel like crap. And I say, have you ever tried taking it more often? Just split it up. You know, and they've never tried that. Are you taking an aromatase inhibitor? Yes. Ditch the aromatase inhibitor. Go on every other day shots just for a little while, just to get serum levels stable.
And I fully agree that estrogen needs to be managed rather than suppressed. There is a big difference between managing estrogen and just slamming it. And it is a hormone that's responsible for a lot of our healthy functions. It has a very positive impact, particularly in muscle growth, but also in healthy lipids and other factors that our body needs. And as yours currently, I'm surprised yours is only at 150 in PMOL, considering where your test is sitting, because I generally see levels much higher than that if they're not using any sort of estrogen control at those sort of doses.
What harm this estradiol cause where it would have to be managed or even lowered by any degree, in your opinion?
It's all based on symptoms. It depends on whether they're symptomatic of a problem or not. If I'm a great believer, and I've done it with people that I coach, I've done it in cycle management, you know, if you're sitting at X amount test levels, your estrogen is high in relative terms, but you feel good, then why would you disturb it? There's no need to.
Because it begs the question, if you're not feeling well, and you just happen to have measured your estrogen and estradiol and it's up there, why say that's your problem? What if the problem was elsewhere? What if the problem had nothing to do with that?
Well, you have to look at the whole picture. You can't just look at one part of a picture and go, oh, well, you got high estrogen, so that's your problem. Mm-hmm. You look at everything.
Right.
And you then start a process of elimination. You know, if you at the end of the day, it's very simple. Drop some aromacin in for a week, bring your levels down 50 points, and then you can say, do you feel any better? No, right, that's not the problem. Pull the aromacin back out. Let's go for something else. It can be quite often just a very old-fashioned, simple, tackle one thing at a time and see which gives the desired result if you're unsure. But I've never seen anyone's estrogen levels plateau. I've always seen them continue to progress.
I have as well. That's what, and I think Dave and I are coming from this more as a performance enhancing perspective too.
Experience more with guys using 2 gram.
That's what, yeah.
You know, but I've never seen it plateau, and I've seen some scarily high estrogen levels.
Dude, Dave, did I ever tell you? Dave, did I ever tell you what my estrogen was? And it was like, I can't remember exactly what I was running, but it was like no more than 600 test. And this is an R range that goes up to like, what, 30 or 40, something like that. It was like 250. Like 250. I mean, I couldn't tell whether I felt fine or not. I wasn't great just because, you know, of a lot of reasons, but I wasn't in a position where I was trying to feel great and create like a sense of longevity taking what I was taking. But yeah, I've never seen that either. So I've never seen it plateau. I saw Dave and I both, our eyebrows both kind of went up at the same time on that.
I hear you.
Yeah, I mean, I will start seeing mild estrogen problems at around 250 to 300 PMOL. I comfortably can go to 200 on a low. The thing is, I'll handle higher estrogen if my test is higher.
The only thing I got was erectile stuff. Like I started having issues at like at 250. But outside of that, I wouldn't have known I had high estrogen.
So you wouldn't agree, therefore, that estradiol will stay in a given ratio. The body will try to keep that in a ratio with whatever test level you have.
I would definitely.
No, because it's impacted by body fat levels.
Well, that's true. I would think that body fat would change it, but I will think that there is a ratio. But I don't think that estrogen's ever going to, because you kind of in your demonstration said that like estrogen will eventually plateau, and I haven't seen that happen.
I've always seen it continue to rise. It doesn't rise always equally, and it doesn't always rise at the same rate, but it will continue to increase.
I mean, I don't
know. Dr. Jordan Grant and our group had posted a study about him. I'll have to see if I can dig it up and find it, and I'll send it to you. This was just a study that he had posted that had demonstrated this, but I'd have to. I'm sure he can send it to me if I ask him for it again, but I'll dig it up and see if I can find it.
Yeah. The only problem with the studies is they just don't take the doses high enough in relative to cycling use, you know, because like you said, I don't think there's ever been a person study of over 600 milligrams per week on any human individual. Whereas we regularly deal with guys that will push into 2 and 3 grams of usage. So, unfortunately, there are other factors that can play into this at times, like the use of trenbolone, which can screw test results and stuff like that. But I've always been very much of if it isn't broke, don't fix it. Mm-hmm. But I have seen, like I said, people only come to me when they have problems. But the vast majority of problems I see are long-term results of people running TRT doses in the 200, 250, 300 ranges. And then 2 years down the line, they're starting to have problems with bloods and they're starting to have problems with this. And they're generally complaining of lethargy and feeling sluggish and just everything starting to be hard work. You get a blood let into them, you get some better management of their controls. And within a couple of weeks, they're feeling 10 times better.
And these are twice healthy individuals. They're like,
Yeah, these are generally otherwise healthy individuals. My big concern with elevated TRT levels is that we really don't know what 10 years of that's going to do. That's my only concern, and that's where the current sort of science thinking is very much that for what they feel is that the long-term higher usage will create problems long term. The cardiac episode incident around TRT is very heavily disputed, and there's as much arguments for TRT treatments causing an increase in cardiac episode as there is for TRT treatments not causing an increase in cardiac episode. Unfortunately, it's an area of research that is very heavily disputed, and we don't really have a clear indication. But I'm finding it really, really interesting, one, your personal experience, and two, where your estrogen actually sits on your dosage. I am very pleasantly surprised, but also very, very surprised at, because, but then, you know, people do aromatize at different rates. The leaner you are, you're going to aromatize at a lesser rate, without doubt. I would assume that your sources and the majority of people you're talking about source-wise are going to be prescription grade, where in my world, the vast majority of use is obviously non-prescription. So we've also got to factor in the fact that there can be widely varying inaccuracies in dosing,
yeah,
because they're buying an underground product. So there's always that element of things. And obviously, esters may not always be what they're supposed to be either as well. There's the other aspect that needs to be considered in this. But I'm finding it quite interesting that at those levels, you're not seeing elevation in blood.
Here's one example I can give that
negative.
I see a lot. Guy says, I'll just give an example. I'm taking 150 milligrams a week, and I am taking Arimidex quarter tab twice a week.
Okay.
So I'm like, okay, why are you taking your Arimidex? Oh, because my E2 was at 50 pgml. Okay. What are you doing? Well, I'm taking my 150 once a week. Have you ever tried doing it more? No. Okay, so let's try getting off the Arimidex.
I know where you're going with this.
And you're going to go more often with your dosaging. Okay, so you're going to try, just for shits and giggles, you're going to try splitting it up into every other day shots. And so instead of having the big peak on the Monday when you inject, and it falls over the course of the week, and you're up and you're down and you're up and down, and you're going to keep it nice and stable. So the guy does that, and I say,
your aromatization reduces.
It's not necessarily the aromatization that reduces. I'll get to that. Because actually, I've seen plenty of times where it hasn't. It's that the levels themselves stay constant and they stay consistent. When you're getting a peak and then it drops, and then the next week a peak and it drops, the rest of the supporting hormones and everything else around it is just constantly in flux, and nothing ever falls into balance. So if you're doing something a little bit more frequent where you're keeping those levels consistent, everything else around it will eventually find its place, and it'll stay consistent and suddenly feel better. So I tell the guy, you're going to feel like maybe shit for 2 or 3 weeks because you got off the AI and your estrogen is going to come back up and you're changing your protocol. Give it a couple weeks, but just stick with it. So I'll say, message me back in, let's say, 6 weeks. So 6 weeks later, he'll tell me, you know, for 3 weeks, I didn't feel good. But then around the fourth week, I feel good. And now I feel pretty good. What do you got left? Well, I got this and this and this. Try raising your dose higher. Let's say they bring it up to 200 milligrams a week. They bring it up to 2 milligrams a week. They're still doing their every other day shots. And the guy messaged me 2 months later. He goes, I feel like $1 million now. I said, okay, go do bloods. Guy goes to do bloods. And now his estradiol is higher than it was before because he's raised his dose. Okay. It doesn't really matter that he went from once a week or whatever. His estradiol is higher than it was before. So I said, so how about that? When you were at your estradiol was here, you had to take an AI because it was too high. Meanwhile, we made a couple little tweaks to your thing. Now your estradiol is higher than it was before, and you feel like $1 million. So if the estradiol is the bad guy, why do you feel better now? And it's higher. And then they're like, they're left mind blown, scratching their head. And I see that all the time. And if it wasn't the case, I wouldn't say it because I just report what I see.
Sure.
And I see it over and over and over. And I get like 10, 20 messages a day. And it's always the same stuff. It's always obsessing with estradiol too much, you know, or they're just taking once weekly shots. They're not taking nearly enough tests. Sometimes they're taking too much tests, but it's almost never an estradiol issue. Like I'm yet to see somebody that I couldn't figure out that I say, I don't know, you need an AI. It hasn't happened yet.
And that's on, really, so that's on TRT. I was going to ask you.
This is on TRT, yeah, right?
I was going to ask you.
About taking D-balls, yeah, and whatever else. It's going to convert into an estrogen metabolite that, you know,
right.
Yeah, you might need.
I was going to ask you, so if you did run into this, and it sounds like you haven't, you've never run into someone where they were, say, taking a TRT dose and that their estrogen was too high, where that was a problem. I mean, is there ever issues? Like, I know a lot of what Dave has said, which I think makes sense to me, is that if you're trying to mimic your natural production, then you shouldn't need an AI. Dave Crossland, you know, I've heard you say that more than once. Yeah. And that if you're taking too much, then that's when, you know, and you needed an AI, then instead of taking an AI, back the dose down. Have you come into situations like that? Or are you saying like estrogen's just never been a problem for people?
I haven't seen it be a problem where I'm talking to somebody. Again, guys, everybody that's watching this for the first time, I'm not a physician.
Sure.
Okay. Yeah. So let's be clear. I'll offer.
Neither am I. Right.
Okay. So I'll tell somebody based on what you're saying.
Yeah.
And based on the experience I've picked up, if I was in your shoes, I would probably try this. If it was me, you're free to try it that way. Maybe it'll work. Maybe it won't.
Yeah.
I get to find someone that I say, you're the exception. You need an AI.
Yes. I just want to ask your standpoint on something. And it's something that I'm deliberately asking this question. Okay. So you cited an example of somebody who contacted you who was not feeling optimum. They were single dosing. Estrogen was a bit on the high side. You got them to space the dosing out and increase the dose. And they reported that they felt absolutely amazing.
Yes.
Yeah. What if I was to deliberately cause an argument by saying, but you're not supposed to feel absolutely amazing?
Why? For him, absolutely amazing was my libido's back into something that makes sense. I can actually have an erection and maintain an erection. I'm sleeping at night. My anxiety's gone down. I have more energy in the day. I don't feel like I need to take a nap in the afternoon. And my cognition is like I'm awake. This is
and what was his age?
I've got tons of examples of that, but it could be any age. I dealt with one maybe 2 weeks ago. The guy was 40, early 40s.
Okay, no, just what I was deliberately being awkward about was there is an argument proposed that. And like you say, when you broke it down to relative terms, he wasn't feeling amazing. He was feeling more normal. it was amazing compared to how he felt.
Absolutely.
But his actual reaction was more normal.
Yeah, to be clear, amazing isn't I'm banging my wife 8 times a day and I feel like I'm going to take out my truck over my head.
Yeah.
No, that
was the point I was moving towards, was there is almost as well, there is a desire from a lot of people to feel more than what they're supposed to feel, or more than what is natural to feel, which does drive usage higher and often drives it into a good place for a period of time and then into a negative place post that, because exposure over a longer period of time does start to cause problems.
Libido, and you can't have an erection if you had to save the world for years, and now you can suddenly do all these things that to us is normal. To this guy, it's amazing.
That's normal bodybuilders for you.
Yeah. Well, listen, guys, I want to jump in here with a couple of our questions that we have, because some of our people, you know, they want to go all the way back to some really basic stuff. Now, I can say that to answer this first question, I mean, obviously, my first thought would be go to a doctor. But if he wants to understand it better, maybe we can help him out a little bit. Can you go over the tests that need to be done to determine, you know, where your hormone levels are, and what the ranges mean? So I suppose if you were interested to find out, you know, do you have a testosterone deficiency? What would you want to look at? Like I said, some really basic stuff here.
Okay, so go ahead and.
I was just going to say the ranges are based on national averages. And a point that we touched on earlier on was, in general, the hormone levels of the population, particularly testosterone levels of the population, are in decline. You can go into all sorts of theories why this is, or why this would be desired by a government. I'm not going to go down those lines, because it's not really what we're about at the end of the day. We're not conspiracy.com. But you could look into, there's all sorts of theories as to why testosterone levels are in decline. But the fact is they are. The offshoot of that is what you're seeing in America. But I think also in America, there's a more deliberate move behind that as well, is that the averages get lower. So as a result, you'll see changes in range that don't always mean that range, we go off range, but it doesn't always mean that range is optimal. I feel it's definitely a start point.
There you go. I think so too. So let's keep it there for now, just to kind of simplify it for, you know, for our listener. Danny, what would be the things you would want to look at hormone wise?
So I don't want to overcomplicate your question, but there's something I need to add to this first.
Okay.
There are too many people out there that believe, if they have their, let's say they present with symptoms, they're hoping that their labs demonstrate that they are on the low end.
And sure.
It's okay, that's why.
Yeah.
Now, what do you do with the guy that has all the symptoms, but he's actually mid-range?
Okay.
Or maybe even on the higher end, has all the symptoms of low testosterone. The doctor says, well, you're normal. It's not this. I've seen cases, and I'm probably even one of them, why I need a higher dose, is just androgen resistance. Our bodies are not clean, pure bodies anymore like they were 100 years ago before industry and everything else. We're polluted, and our receptors get heavily polluted. And the testosterone that gets in, whatever bit we have, sometimes just can't find enough receptors to attach to, because they're just flooded with, you know, they call them EDCs, endocrine disrupting chemicals. The hormones in the water and the plastics and the BPH and the pesticides and whatever else. So the guy's got, you know, you measure his serum levels, he's got ample tests. It's just not having the desired effect. And sometimes we're finding guys that, you know, their levels have to get jacked up pretty high just to feel some semblance of normal. There's doctors I deal with that have told me sometimes they'd have to prescribe like 400 milligrams of tests just to have the guy say, hey, I finally have an erection after 8 years.
I have clients like that, a few of them.
You know, and it's just, it is what it is. So to say, I'm just going to base everything on a lab, you know, if you're low on a lab, it makes your life easier, because now at least the doctor can cover his ass by justifying treatment to say, well, he was measurably low, I put him on test. But what happens if you were mid-range or upper, and you had symptoms of low test? that's where it gets tricky. And that's where you need a progressive doctor that says, you have all the symptoms that indicate this. Let's do a trial of TRT and bring your levels higher to see what effect it has.
Yeah.
You know, so for, you know, basic tests, you can measure LH, which is luteinizing hormone, FSH, which is follicle stimulating hormone. You can measure total testosterone, free testosterone, SHBG, which is sex hormone binding globulin. You can just do a, you know, basic, you know, like the RBC, just general basic CBC, blood health. Check for lipids as well. Even now, lipids is, you know, cholesterol is, that's also kind of controversial. It's not nearly as much of a danger as we think, but, you know, and also check thyroid, free T3, free T4, TSH, thyroid stimulating hormone, DHEAS, check your vitamin D levels. Those would be kind of like the bare bones, I guess you could say, of what you can start with. I might have missed one or two, but that's kind of the bare bones one.
I'd throw vitamin B12 in there as well.
B12 would be another great one, yeah. Yeah, lots of guys deficient in B12. Almost everyone's deficient in vitamin
D. Vitamin, yeah.
You know, so those would be kind of the bare bones, I would say, to check at first.
Okay. Yeah, because I feel like, too, you make a good point about if things were in range, having a doctor there. Because I feel like so many people nowadays are just, like I've said before, I've seen 19-year-old kids that are giving out steroid advice on YouTube. And then they say, hey, if you want me to read your lab work, drop me an email, send it over. These are people that know how to read a range and tell you if you're in range or not in a range. You know, oh, you need to take some milk thistle, you know.
You know Dr. Serrano, right? What does he say? Any monkey can read a lab result.
There you go.
The guys that post their labs. These are my labs. What do I do?
Let's see.
It tells me nothing.
About fixing, this is something I've seen a lot of guys run into on TRT. Can we talk fertility, guys? Can we talk about fixing and improving fertility rates while on TRT? I'm working with a guy right now who... he had natural low levels. You could see too that he's never been a guy who had high test. I don't know the reasons why, but he got onto TRT. He'd been on it for 2 years and now he's getting married. He wants to have a baby and he's come off of his TRT. He's tried to do PCT. He's gotten what was his natural level back, but it's not a good level. He doesn't feel happy with it. Sperm count is pretty good, but he's going through a lot to get to this end. What about actually trying to improve fertility while still using TRT?
Well, the only things you can really try is you can use HCG, which will, it acts as a, it mimics LH, luteinizing hormone in the body. So it'll actually stimulate the testicles to produce more sperm. There's also HMG, which is apparently even better than HCG, but it's very rarely prescribed.
HMG is a mix of SFH and LH, or mimics FSH and LH together, where HCG only mimics LH.
Right.
It's, one of the key instances is an increase in ITT, which is intertesticular testosterone. Mm-hmm. One of the problems with most TRT dosing is that though it is adequate for serum levels, it's not enough to actually raise intertesticular testosterone levels. And obviously, inhibins, localized inhibins, will prevent an upflux of test production in the testes when you're running TRT. But what's been shown is that HCG will increase intertesticular testosterone, so ITT. Testosterone has a direct impact on sperm production, as Danny said, which is why you see guys on cycle still conceiving. Mm-hmm. Because on cycle, the overall serum levels of testosterone are that high that it can't do anything but raise ITT.
Hmm. So take, as a result, take more tests.
As it says, the number of people that I have seen, come off cycle to conceive and been unsuccessful, then gone back on cycle and conceived because they can't get those ITT levels high enough to support the sperm production through FSH alone. Because sperm production is influenced through FSH, but it's also influenced through testosterone.
I don't know how anybody gets anyone pregnant off cycle or off TRT, because if I got off TRT, I wouldn't be thinking about sex at all. So I don't know how I'm going to get that done personally.
That's a factor.
There is another option that was brought to my attention recently that I learned a little bit about. So HCG mimics LH. HCG mimics LH opposite. There's apparently a peptide called, well, not apparently, there is a peptide called kisspeptin, which tells the hypothalamus to send a message to the pituitary to stimulate it. So it's like, it's a more natural mechanism of stimulation instead of a direct stimulation.
How does that override the negative feedback loop?
I have basic knowledge of this stuff. I did an interview on the channel with Jean-François Tremblay. He's the owner of CanLab Peptides. And he actually sent me a few vials of it. He sent me a whole bunch of stuff to try. But he did send me this saying it would technically act better than HCG or HMG. I haven't tried it. I don't know anybody else has tried it. All I'm saying is I have heard of this other method, but to me, it's yet to be demonstrated.
Yeah. Do you remember, Dave, we talked about that quite a while ago. There was somebody had a question, so we had looked it up, and we didn't find a ton about it. What about triptorelin?
And triptorelin, I know very few people that have it. It's been thrown around here and there.
Yeah.
I heard it's very good, but I'm yet to really speak to anyone that has.
Yeah.
I know that with my wife, I was on TRT for a while and she wanted to have a kid. I took 500 IU HCG twice a week and I got the job done.
While on TRT?
Yeah, I'd been on TRT for years at that point.
Nice.
I know a lot of guys that got their wives pregnant inadvertently without even knowing, and they were on TRT thinking they're sterile.
Yeah.
Guys, if you're taking testosterone and you're having sex with somebody, you know what they call those people? They call them fathers. So keep that in mind just in case.
All right.
Yeah, no, it's a lot more common than people realize. Most people go the wrong way about it, as your client has, but that is actually probably creating more problems than it's solving. Triptorelin, I find, has its benefit in more in natural recovery rather than in supplementation while on TRT for pregnancy.
All right. How about sub-Q versus IM and frequency of administration?
Okay. I have literature I posted in that Facebook group that shows a very small difference between sub-Q and IM. On paper. However, I have seen guys that do exponentially better on IM versus sub-Q, and I have seen guys that do exponentially better on sub-Q than IM. I've seen guys that say, if I take sub-Q, I don't need an AI, and if I do IM, I absolutely do, okay? I've seen all kinds of different things. I have tried both for myself, and I have not seen a difference either way. For me, but I have seen guys have definite preferences.
All
right. I just find sub-Q easier.
Yeah?
Yeah, I just find sub-Q so much easier. You're not messing around with bloody great needles. It's just so, I just find it so much easier.
But the thing that a lot of times guys that are doing sub-Q is they're doing daily sub-Q.
Ah, okay.
And saying I'm doing it to mimic my natural, no. No one's, in my opinion, no one's trying to mimic your natural whatever. Naturally, you're getting pulses throughout the day and whatever else. Most guys on TRT are taking twice weekly injections. We're not trying to mimic anything. We're just trying to make sure we have enough of it in our bodies, and that's it. I'm never telling anyone you need to do it like this to mimic your natural production or diurnal rhythm or whatever else. No.
If you were trying to mimic natural, you'd be on test base and you'd be injecting first thing in the morning and then you'd be letting it drop a bit low in the afternoon and then you'd be doing about 3-4 injections a day. It would be an absolute ball ache.
How about, okay, I've got one more for Danny, and this might be something you've been able to help people with. Maybe not. I don't know. You're in Canada. This guy, he says he's in Florida, and he said there seems to be 100+ TRT clinics down there. He wants to know how can he go about finding a legit company, somebody that he can trust working with.
There are TRT clinics everywhere. You can take a little course and become a TRT practitioner. I think you can even open one up without even doing it. You just got to get some doctor that maybe, you know, is out of a job and say, okay, you're going to be my prescribing physician and you'll write the prescriptions. Yeah. They're everywhere. And the problem is that it's mostly cookie cutter protocols. We're going to put you on 200 milligrams a week. You're going to take 2 milligrams a week of AI. You're going to take your HCG and you're going to take this and be on your way. And it's like, holy shit, if it was that simple, like we wouldn't be doing this. We wouldn't have the YouTube channel and the group. We just tell everyone, you take this, you take this, you take this, and that's the magic formula.
Yeah.
Every single guy I see is a different dose, different frequency, different everything. And it's experimentation. I did a video on that channel just last week saying of even with everything I know now, how long it took of experimenting and more importantly, documenting everything I tried. So I'm like, let me try this and I'm going to document it. Let me try that and document it. And then I can go back in time and say, this protocol had this effect. And this protocol, I had no libido. But this protocol, my libido was out of control, but I couldn't sleep. But here I had good libido and I could sleep. So as you're looking back at all your logs, you can see this is getting closer and closer to my ideal. And even then you'll start tweaking, adding a bit, maybe lowering your dose or maybe decreasing frequency. Then you might find that you have, I recently started adding magnesium.
Mm, yeah.
J.F. Trompley says everyone's deficient in magnesium, probably 85% of the population. I threw that in, that helped. My sleep is even better than before. I feel better. You know, you got to be a bit of a type A personality to do this kind of thing and just constantly just trying stuff out. The big problem with people is they make too many changes at once.
Yeah.
So then the outcome, no idea what was it. You know, so if I'm going to up my dose and change my frequency, I'm going to take some zinc and I'm going to throw in some B12. Oh, now I feel like this. What caused it? How the hell do I know?
Yeah.
You need to change a single variable, give it 6 to 8 weeks, test that out, document it. What did that variable, what effect did it have? And that's the problem with people is they're too impatient. They want the results now and they're constantly changing stuff every couple of days and they're never getting ahead because you don't know what the changes are doing.
So you would say do it. You would advocate doing it yourself versus going to a doctor?
No. I'm not saying that at all. You need a doctor that is not going to do a cookie cutter protocol.
I see.
Says, okay, we're going to put you on this and go.
You need
a doctor that's going to assess and say, we're going to try this out. In 6 weeks, you're going to get back. We're going to tweak this and tweak that and whatever else. But there's just so many clinics out there, just put everybody on the same thing.
I gotcha.
But I was talking about the experimenting is, you know, if your doctor has you on a dose of, say, 150 milligrams a week, I mean, and you're taking twice weekly injections, I mean, there's really nothing stopping you after a while to say, you know, let me try splitting this up into daily.
Try
splitting this every other day, or let me try throwing in some zinc or whatever else. As long as you're taking that weekly amount that he's prescribed, you can see if you can get things dialed in even further.
I see. So go beyond don't just take what the doctor says just for granted. To look into it a little bit further and look at the other elements that you could possibly manipulate to improve this even further.
Yeah, that isn't going against what he's saying. You know, if
yeah.
he prescribes you 150 and you say, well, I got my hands on some enanthate over here and I'm
right.
taking 400. Doc, I feel great. Doc, it's not, I told you to take 150.
Yeah.
But if you said, hey, doc, just letting you know that I tried doing daily instead of twice a week, your same dose, but I feel much better. You're not going against his prescription.
That makes sense.
But if you're going to throw anything in, even just a vitamin, throw in one. So I'm just going to take 10,000 IU vitamin D and I'm not going to try and change anything else for 6 weeks and just make sure that I don't have any adverse effects and gauge how I feel. Do I feel better? Has it had any effect? You know, people are just throwing so much stuff into the mix all at once and they have no idea what caused the outcome.
Yeah. All right. Cool.
We see that all the time in cycle management, the same. So,
all right. You know. Well, we are out of time here, Danny. I'm really grateful to have had you over to share your insights with us and kind of broaden our perspectives a little bit.
Cool. Hope it was helpful.
Thank you.
we'll have your contact information, you know, your social media and stuff, and we'll have the YouTube site too, YouTube page linked in our show notes. So guys, this has been Danny Bossa of the TRT and Hormone Optimization channel over at YouTube. Though he's not officially there 100% anymore, he's still there.
And you guys can all look me up on Facebook, Danny Bossa. You'll see this ugly mug. You can't miss it. If you want to send me a message there, it's fine. And I can show you guys where that Facebook group is. A lot of knowledgeable guys in there lately. It's been pretty helpful.
That's cool. All right, guys, for another episode of Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland and Danny Bossa, I'm Scott McNally. Our programming is brought to you by TrueNutrition.com and GetAzoth.com. We will see you soon. Thanks, guys.